Today we sit down with legendary course designer Jim Fazio.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week you'll get inside information on how to lower your scores through strategy and course management. We'll ask course pros, designers, and architects to reveal their secrets in an effort to improve your game. If you're a beginner or a seasoned pro, subscribe to the Golf Smarter podcast. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. Recently, I had the opportunity to sit down with legendary course designer and architect Jim Fazio to interview him for a video that I was producing for the Country Club of Oxford in Oxford, Mississippi. Just for the sake of background, TTour.com Productions was secured by Troon Golf to create a short membership recruitment video for the Country Club of Oxford's website. Oxford is the home of the University of Mississippi, Nobel Prize-winning author William Faulkner, and also John Grisham. My objective was to interview Fazio, a Troon Golf executive, and the two owners of the course for the video. Luckily, Mr. Fazio agreed that we could use the interview for the Golf Smarter podcast. Because we weren't exactly sure what we needed for the sales video, the interview is in-depth and longer than a normal Golf Smarter interview. Please stick around, though, because after the interview, I'll give you information on how you can see the finished video on the web and get a sense of how highlights of this interview were isolated to create a four-minute piece. Jim Fazio is a member of one of golf's royal families. His uncle George, an accomplished player, competed with Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, among other great golfers of the era. But once he stopped competing professionally, he started to design courses. In 1961, George's two nephews, Jim and his younger brother, Tom, were drawn into this creative line of work and for 20 years were associated as an industry-leading team. Since 1986, Jim has run his own company as a designer, builder, owner, and innovator. I hope you enjoy the interview because I think you're going to get a lesson in course design that could change the way you look at courses forever. Now, as we begin, I just asked Jim what his vision is for the Country Club of Oxford.
Well, the vision for the Country Club of Oxford is, when I first saw it, you know, the impression when you first see something and then you get a little apprehensive of what can I really do with this place and how can I really make it something special. That's the main thought going through your mind. And you know, it started to evolve, you know, with the design that we had. The land that we were given was the real, you know, icing on the cake, where we could take the existing course as it was and reduce it from 18 holes to 12, and then add three on the north side and three on the south side that really brought the project, you know, to what it's going to be. Those six holes are just incredible golf holes. And they blend and match with the 12 that we already have because we have some elevation on some of them and we have some flat areas on the other. And it just turned out well beyond my expectations, you know, when I first saw the property. I'm really pleased with it because I was a little nervous when I first saw it, to tell you the truth. When I took the job from a friend of mine who was a friend of the owner's, and knowing that I've been doing this for 40 years, I said, well, I can fix any golf course. You know, that's easy. It's already there. You just have to tweak this, that, and the other. And when I came out and looked at the golf course, I said, oh, my God, what did I get into? And I was kind of mad at Mike Redd for getting me in. He was the land planner with the owners. I said, Mike, what did you do to me? I said, I don't know how I'm going to do anything with this place. And then it wasn't until then that I looked at it, and they showed me the other land. I said, okay, you know, don't panic. You know, you can do something here. So I started massaging the plan that we had and the land that we had, and we came up with a design, you know, where we could get back. We don't have the ninth hole back at the clubhouse because the clubhouse is now at a far point on the south end, which is probably the best site on the whole place. It's going to overlook a future lake. It overlooks the driving range, the 18th hole and the first hole, and just a great setting. So we came up and we had to get it done quick, so we hired two contractors, and me and my son Jimmy were out here all the time while it was being built because it was done on such a fast track. And it's hard for somebody to come out and pick which is the best hole right now. I mean, there's controversy, which is a good thing. You know, when you can't find the best hole, everybody's picking different holes, that's a good sign. Whenever somebody asks me, what's your favorite hole, I say, of the par threes, the par fours, or the par fives, because they're all different. You know, you just can't, unless there's something so spectacular with one, like your 16th at Pebble Beach where you're hitting across the ocean, you know, that's a special hole. But I'm pleased with the way it turned out. It's going to be a fun facility to belong to and to play golf on.
What did you mean by 12 holes were there?
Well, there was an 18-hole course, and I knocked it down to 12 holes. I combined holes, eliminated some holes, and added 3 holes on one end and 3 holes on the other end to get back to 18 holes. There were 2 holes out there that were only 200 feet wide. It was like suicide lane. That hole now is our par 5 14th hole, which some say may be one of the better holes on the golf course. But before, it was 2 holes. Then there was another par 3 alongside of it. We completely eliminated that, made number 17 wider and put the creeks in and controlled the water and put a couple lakes in. So we did a lot of work on the 18 holes to make them 12 good holes. And then we added the 3 on the north and 3 on the south.
Is it more difficult to design a course when there's nothing there, or when you already have a course in place that you've got to redo?
It's easier to start with nothing. Then you have a free slate, and then you can pick where the holes go, because a lot of these holes shouldn't have been where they were. And, you know, the par 4 shouldn't have been par 4s, the par 3 shouldn't have been par 3s. I mean, it just wasn't set up right. But to get a nice piece of land, and especially a hilly piece of land, it's a little harder to find, you know, the holes and maybe to build them. But when it's done and you do the right job, it just sort of blends and flows like, you know, it's just sort of a natural layout, and nothing contrived or anything like that. And I think that's what we have right now. You know, we've taken the 18 holes, made 12 nice holes out of them, added, you know, 3 holes on each end, and they've got themselves a championship golf course out here.
And what kind of challenges, you know, what was the biggest challenge, let's put it that way, what was the biggest challenge in doing that for you?
Controlling the water. This is the wettest piece of property I've ever seen. I mean, there are springs that flow all year round. We can have a drought out here for 6-7 months, and water's popping up all over the golf course, the fairways are wet, and it hasn't rained. And you can't play golf. The superintendent couldn't mow the property half the time down on the lower end. And the drainage system was enormous on this project. And even we have to be able to control off-site water that's coming through our property. And that's a big job, because they're developing this property on the outside of us, which means bare ground, which means mud when it rains. So we have to set up silt barriers and fences to get clean water into our pipes so it can flow through our golf course to get out the south end of the property. That was probably the biggest challenge, controlling the water and still making it be able to play when it rains. And we had a 5-inch rain Saturday, and I would say if this course was a year old, we could have played golf the next day. Even it did a little bit of damage, but it's off to the side. But the fairways were dry, the greens were dry, the tees were dry. So that was a big accomplishment. That was a big engineering job that was done here.
So is technology coming up to a point now where you can really create great drainage for a new course?
And oh, yeah.
Did you do that with Oxford?
We did that with Oxford. And my thing is, with when you have to irrigate something, you also have to drain it. You'll spend as much money draining it as you will irrigating some pieces of property. And here, that was one of the things. It was there was so much outside influence of water coming through the property, it cost almost as much as the irrigation system. And those irrigation systems are, you know, upwards of $1 million. And I mean, we have some large pipes out here to control water and catch basins.
So since we're here for twofold, but our main purpose for being here is to try to recruit memberships for the Country Club of Oxford. Let's assure people that the day after a rain or even during a rain, it's going to be a very playable course.
Well, it will, because first of all, we have the golf cart path that goes all through the golf course. So if it's raining and they say cart paths only, you can still go out and play. The next day, you'll be able to go out and play. The good thing about the property is it's sandy soil, and we have Bermuda grass on it, and when we cut it down close, with all the catchment areas that we made, the water doesn't have to travel very far to get into catch basin. So it dries up really fast. You may have a 5-inch rain, and 2 days from now, the course will be so dry you need the irrigation on. I mean, that's how well it's drained. And so the question of a sunny day, ground's too wet, that won't happen here. You can get out and play because you can always keep the cart on the path and walk over to your ball. The next day, you'll be able to drive all over. I mean, I saw that the 5-inch rain we had Saturday, I got here yesterday, and they were driving all over it Saturday or Sunday and Monday, you know, trying to just get the leaves cleaned up and things like that. So it was dry. And it wasn't before. I assure you it wasn't before.
Talk about the greens for a minute. They're going to be fast, I mean, because the drainage is so good.
The drainage doesn't have much to do with the greens being fast. We have USGA greens, which has, you know, the foundation of them, the drain tile, the stone layer, the greens mix for good root zone. That'll produce a good grass, the mix that we put on. The speed of the greens is determined by the superintendent, how low he cuts the mowers. We have a mini Verde, they call it. It's a hybrid Bermuda greens grass that they can get really fast. What really makes a green fast or unplayable is the slope that's put on it by the architect. So in designing greens, you have to be very careful of slope and pitch and, you know, acceptability of shots. So, and I think that's the most important thing of the whole golf course. If the greens can accept the shot, do what it's supposed to do, then be able to putt it, even if it's fast or slow, then you've created a good feeling that a guy can hit the ball on the green, he knows it's going to stay there, and he knows he has a chance of making a putt. They're not real dipsy-doodle greens, you know, with humpback whales in the middle of them where you're putting roller coaster putts, but they have a lot of contour on them, you know, some slope, and different pin placements. I mean, you can make the golf course really hard by tucking pins in corners or even putting them up front. The toughest pin placement is a front pin placement, unless you put the green drainage from front to back, and then you're putting uphill. But anytime you're putting downhill on a fast green, you're scared to death to take the putter back. So they will have good greens out here, very puttable, and you're going to have to go at the pin if you want to make birdies, because it's going to be tough to make 20 and 30 footers because there is movement in the greens. They're not just built up flat and, you know, it's a putting contest. You have to be a good putter to make 25, 30 footers out here. But it's going to give them a challenge out in the fairway, because when I design a course, I like to make them think, you know, if I want to make birdie, I have to go here. I can't make it from over here. Sometimes you'll build a green, they'll build a round circle, and anywhere on the green, you're only 15, 20 feet away from the pin. My greens, I like to keep them long and narrow and angle them so that there's a short side and a long side. So if you take a club to get to the long side of the green and you bail out, you may go over the other side. So it's you have to get to know this course and how to play it. It's going to take a few times until you learn how to think and do what you're able to do. Do what you want to do, you know, to be able to play a really good game.
Is there a different thought process when you're designing a course for a private course versus a public course or a resort course? Because, you know, with a private course, obviously people are going to be playing the course over and over and over. They play the same thing. But with a resort, they may only play it once or once a year, right, versus a muni where they, you know, play, you know, once a month or something.
Well, I would classify it this way, that a public course and a private course can almost be built the same way. And I say that because I did one out in Indiana for a friend of mine, and he wanted to turn it private. And he says, what do I have to do to turn this private? I said, just cut the grass different, add a few trees, Leave the greens alone, leave the tees alone, don't do anything to the golf course. You got your private golf course. A resort course is one that you can get more dramatic on, more controversial on, because they're only going to be there, you know, for a week or 10 days playing golf. Then they can go home to their own course, which they know they can play. You get a place like Teeth of the Dog that Pete Dye does. He builds a great resort course. A lot of these guys do. And they make it so that you wouldn't want that every day of your life to play. You know, it'd beat you up. But you do want to play it once or twice. You know, anytime you go there, I want to go play that. I don't care how many balls I lose. That's how I would classify, you know, the different types of design. But I think I can make a public course as good as it can be, and without changing the structure of the golf course, earthwork or more bunkers, this or that, and turn it private just by changing the cuts of the grass and adding a few trees to give it a little narrower alleyways or, you know, a different type of look without doing anything to the golf course.
And you say a different type of look. Are we talking about the visual aspect of it?
Visual aspect, yeah. In other words, you would a public golf course, let's say the fairways are 150 feet wide. That gives a guy an area that he can spray the ball a little bit. When you get onto a private course, you may cut the fairways down to 120 feet. You have a rough, a semi-rough, then you have a tree sticking out in the corner. Public courses, you want play to be fast. You don't want to slow them down. Private courses, they're respectful of time. So they know, even though it may be a little harder, a little tighter, they still have that time factor involved that they're not going to keep their friend in back of them waiting. You know, they're going to play a little bit faster. And it's just a matter of, you know, resetting some trees and bringing it in a little bit and giving it a, you know, hang a tree out on a corner where they have to play away from it. You don't do that to public players. You just want to give them a good shot, a good look, and a good green so they still feel like they have a challenge, and you can do that. If you have to go rebuild greens and rebuild bunkers to go from public to private, then you didn't do the right job the first time.
Let's talk about designing a golf course now and the thought that goes behind it for strategy for a player. Is that a consideration?
To me, it's the number one consideration. In other words, when I first get a plan before the golf course is even designed, I want to know who it's for, who's going to be using it, what's your future intent of it, and then I start designing golf holes. And when you design golf holes, to get variety, you need different directions, you know, for the wind factor and the, you know, playability. And you have your long holes. The key to a great golf course is the par fours. Par threes you can't do much with. You have to keep them under 250. Par fives, they can all reach them in two. You can't make them 900 yards, so they have to use three clubs. So the key to a golf course, I think, is the par fours. And you have to have good short par fours to have a great golf course. And you have to have good long par fours to have a great golf course. So I look at those as the key elements to a golf course. You can always, you know, get good-looking par threes and par fives. When you take the plan, you look for specific things on the land. In Florida, we have a dead flat piece of land, so you just create things. When you have a hilly piece of land, you look for something out of the ordinary, how a golf hole would work. You know, would a par four go best here? Would a par three? Would a par five setting green be the right spot? So it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You have to put this thing together and get back to the clubhouse, you know, out and back twice if you're going to have the ninth hole there. So in designing, I think of the threes and the fives in different directions, the fours in the total length of them, the short ones and the long ones. And then I start my planning right then for strategy. So if it's a hilly piece of ground, I'll try to get at least two or three par fours going uphill that are long. That's the only saving grace you have, so they don't hit just driving nine irons. These guys can hit the club. They can hit a ball 300 yards now, so everything's driving a wedge. So you need length on par fours, and you need short ones, and then you need some options where you have some risk-reward. I mean, that gives a player a chance to make a birdie, to take a risk, and it also, you know, makes him fall down. You know, He's not always going to make that shot, you know, leak off, go in the water, but at least he had the chance to try. So you want them to start thinking from the time they step on the tee, you know, where's the best place for me to hit this golf ball? Is it on the right side or the left side? And I've learned this from my uncle. When you have to give a guy an option. You can't take everything away from him and let him hit a 3-iron, 4-iron all the time. I don't like taking the driver out of a guy's hand. So if he can make the shot, you give it to him. If he doesn't make the shot, he has a tougher shot the next one. And I think the object to my design is, I don't want to see him make double bogey, but if they have a chance to make bogey or make par, you give it to them. If they can execute the shot, you let them have it. You don't penalize them so that they have to hit out of a bunker sideways or they have to come back. Lies that they can't hit golf balls off of. I like everything playable. So if you're on my golf course, you're going to be able to hit the ball. You're going to be able to advance it. If you get in a bunker, you may not reach the green, but you don't have to hit 9-iron, then 7-iron. You hit 7-iron, then wedge or something like that. So, and I don't like people saying, well, which way does this hole go when they stand on the tee? I want them to know which way it goes. And then after they play it a couple times, I say, well, the last time I was here on the left side, it was a tough shot. I got to stay on the right side. And then with the angle, and I build in angles, you know. And the least angle you have, the tougher it is. Because they can all hit a real big slice or they can all hit a real big hook. But you tell them, just draw the ball around this corner, that's a tough thing to do, a little bit. They don't know how to do a little bit. They can do it a lot. And
not necessarily by choice.
Yeah. So I want to make them think in how to play their game and at least get close to their handicap. And I think if I take a 10 handicapper and on par 72 and he shoots 82, he played good that day. And if he shoots 83 or 84, he may still think he played good, but his score was a little bit high. And that's the challenge of the golf course. It's not that if you play your game, you're going to beat your handicap every time. You got to really play to shoot your handicap, or else you got to start taking lessons to get better. And I don't believe in easy. I believe in fair, and I believe, you know, no cross hazards because people can't do cross hazards. You know, you have to think of everybody that's going to play it. You don't want give a guy a forced carry of 125 or 50 yards. They can't do it. I mean, they can't finish a score. They'll never be able to play in a medal play tournament. And I've been aware of that fact since I was 19 years old, and it sticks in the back of my head. And my brother will tell you the same thing. It sticks in the back of his head. Everybody's got to be able to play the golf course. Whether it's hard, it has to be fair.
Tell me about the par fours at Oxford.
There's some great par fours out here. Just looking at the 18th is one that you would just take a picture of and say, well, give me five and I'll settle for five. You know, it just sets up. There's a valley there. There's another valley. And after the landing area, the green sets up. It's well bunkered. There's a place to miss on the right. So if you do, you have a chance to chip and still make four. But you'd have to hit two really good shots to, you know, have a chance at your birdie. The eighth hole is a, you know, 400-yard, you know, par four. Great fairway setting. It had a lot of contour in the fairway. We put some really great bunkers in there. And for a long hitter, he may want to hit a three wood there so he doesn't get down in the neck and get caught in some of the contours. And then just have a, you know, 9-iron wedge into the green. The 10th hole is 400 yards, but it goes uphill. So you'll see the flagstick, you'll see all the bunkers, you'll see the green when you're standing on the tee. Then you lose sight of it when you go down in the valley. So it's sort of a blind shot, but you have the view of it while you're on the tee. You'll know where the pin is, and then all you got to do is execute the next shot. We have some great par threes out here. The 11th hole's 265 yards from the back tee. It's all downhill, but there's a place to hit it. See, on the second hole, some people are picking the second hole to be the best par four. You hit to a sort of a blind fairway, and you're sitting up high, hitting down to the green, and there's a tree that sits down there. If you're on the left-hand side of the fairway, you may have to hit a knockdown shot around the tree. So the next time you play, you're going to know you have to be over on the right-hand side to hit the ball onto the green and not have the tree as a factor. Now, when you're on the right-hand side, there's some bunkers that are short on the right-hand side of the green. So you have to carry those bunkers. So you don't get away easy. You just have a better shot, a full shot that you don't have to do anything with. You can just swing at it. So it's they're going to have fun out here. Out here at Oxford, they're going to have to know how to hit a lot of shots, knockdown shots, you know, punch shots, and they're going to have to be thinking all the time where they want the ball so that when they play, they know there's a good, an easy side and a hard side.
But it's fun.
But it's going to be exciting for them, I think. You know, they're going to have a lot of enthusiasm. The first time they play, they're going to say, I want to come back and do this over because I know I can do this. They're always going to have the feeling they can do it, but they may not. You know, golf is a funny game. You can put them on par threes, perfect lies. How many guys are going to hit the greens all the time? So you get a little bit of a lie. And that's the other thing that we do is we create a lie in the fairway according to the golf hole. And that's how much thought we put into this. If we have a short hole, short par four, I may put the ball 2 inches below their feet at address. It's not enough to think about, but if you after you hit the shot, you'll say, why did that go right? And then you'll say, okay, the ball's below my feet, so the club face is going to open a little bit. It's going to go right. If it's a long hole, I'll give them a hook stance where they can get a fairway wood underneath it, and they feel like, you know, they can make a swing at it. You put a fairway wood in the guy's hand with the ball below his feet, he's going to slice it out of bounds. So we create shots, not only just design greens and put flat tees in, but we create the fairway shot for the hole, which I think is important. And I've never heard anybody say they do that, but I know that I do it. And that's another thing that they'll have to think about out here. If they get it over on the right-hand side and it's a short hole, they may have a little downhill lie. If they hit it too far, you know, there's going to be a reward for every good shot you hit, and there's going to be some consequences for every shot you don't hit well. But you'll still be able to move it forward, get to the green. Just maybe a little bit harder. But they will have fun out here at Oxford.
Tell me about the level of play at Oxford or the level of players. I mean, are you catering to all level of skill?
Well, from what I hear, the university is going to play their home matches out here. So I know that from the back tees, they better bring their game with them because it's going to be all they can handle. First hole opens up 595. And the green is set in on a almost, if you're at your third shot, the green is almost straight in. But if you're coming in from your tee shot, the green is sort of sideways and it's hidden by half a cluster of trees. So you could get to the front part of the green on your second shot. I mean, these guys can hit it 600 yards in two shots, let's face it. And they can go for this green if they want. And if they put it on the front edge and the pin's in the back, you know, they'll have a 50, 60 footer, but they're putting for eagle. If we happen to put it up front, they may be putting for birdie. But behind that part of the green, I didn't give them a bunker that they're going to blast it in and get a buried lie. It's a grass depression. They'll have a chance to get out and still make birdie. So whenever I give them something, I try to give them relief also. But the higher handicap golfer that plays here, he's not going to have a problem with any of the golf holes. We have one cross hazard out here on the first, second, third hole. It used to be number 8, so I have to recount. I never get those straight once they renumber the golf courses. It's a cross hazard that we had no way of getting around. They have to hit the ball over a lake. It's probably 150-yard shot. So the ball's teed up, and they played it before, so they're not going to cuss me out because I put a new hole in for them. But that's the only difficult shot out here. All the rest of the shots, whether they're, you know, high handicap ladies, high handicap men, they're going to be able to hit it and, you know, move the ball forward and keep it going.
How do you create illusions on a golf course? How does the designer create illusions to mess with the player's head?
By giving him something he thinks he can do. and that he can do if he hits it absolutely perfect, right, makes the proper swing or whatever. That's the fun of designing a golf hole with a risk-reward. He has a chance to do it. I mean, an illusion is something that, you know, is there or not there. The shot is there if you can carry it off. And if you can, you get a, you know, you get a great feeling out of it. If you can't, you're going to try it the next time anyway again, because it, the opportunity is still there, and it doesn't go away. So depending on what tee you use, maybe the opportunity goes away. If you go further back, maybe you can't carry this bunker. So if they have the tees up one day, you can do it. If they have the tees back one day, you can do it. You can't do it. But, and the wind plays a factor in that also. Some days the wind may be coming out of the left side and favors, you know, pushing the ball to the right. So if there's out of bounds over there, you may not want to try it. You may slice it. But the when you say illusions in golf, if you can't do it and you see it, then it's just not there. So you have to make it there and enticing to make them want to do it or try it, because they know how far they can hit it before they come to the hole. And if they see the scorecard and the yardage book and it's there, they're going to try it. You know, if they're up, if they're playing a match play tournament and they're up three or four and they have nothing to lose, they'll try it. If they're behind three or four and they need a hole, they're going to try it because it's their opportunity to get it. So that's how we'll design the golf course, that they think they can do it, and if they pull it off, they can. But the illusion would be, the bad part of the illusion would be, if you let them think they can do it and there's no way they can do it, then that's not golf.
And you don't like it when it's unfair?
I don't like it when it's unfair, no.
And when you're designing, do you do most of your design of a golf course at the drafting table or when you're standing on the property?
When I stand on the property. We stand on this property enough to know every blade of grass that's being planted, every lie, every stance, everything that you're going to have. In the shaping of the golf course is what you really see when it's all finished. You know, where the angles of the bunkers come in, if it was hidden, you know, if we didn't move it back out. So we'll stand on the tee. You know, every time I come to the golf course here at Oxford, I used to stand on the tee, watch him shape the fairway, go out and stand on the landing area, not just the center, but on the right side, the left side, and not just the landing area. You have to stand back because most people are playing it behind the turning point, because we'll set our turning points at 800 feet. Most people can only hit it 600 feet. So you've got to have visual, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards behind where you think everybody's supposed to hit it, because that's where 80% of your players are going to play from, short of your turning point or your IP point. So they're the guys that we're most concerned with, that they have a view of the golf course playing from where they're going to play, and that they have the opportunity to hit that ball and make the green, or at least get it to a safe side where they can chip up, still have a chance at par, maybe bogey, but bogey at the worst.
So you spend a tremendous amount of time walking the course before you ever start designing anything, or walking that property.
No, we do the design, and then as we're building it, that's when I do the walking, when we're building and shaping. That's the critical time when you're shaping the golf course. After the trees are out, you're starting to move the dirt, and you know where you want your bunkers placed, where you want your fairway landing areas to be, how far back do they have to be, and you know if you have a hilly piece of ground, you have to be careful that if you know your IP point is at 800 feet, what happens at 600? Is it blind when you get to 800 that you can't see the green? So you can't create blind shots. So there's a lot of work done to make sure that the player that hits it short can still enjoy the golf course where the player hits it long. So, and then bunkers where they're placed. And that's why we have different sets of tees, so they all theoretically can get to the turning point, the 800 point number. That's the ideal spot to be at, 800 or 850, whatever you want to use. So with the different lengths of tee boxes, we try to get them to that point, but we know they all don't get there. Everybody doesn't hit the shot they're supposed to, so we still have to make the golf course playable, you know, 200 feet behind the turning point. And that's where we put a lot of emphasis, because that's where 80% of the people will play. So when the guys come out here to play at Oxford, they're going to have the same view as the guy that hits it 30, 40 yards past them. They're going to be able to see the green, know what where the bunkers are, and nothing hidden, no surprises. You know, if you can pull it off, you can have it. That's my theory.
So the design is really a relative thing. I mean, from the time you start, it continues to evolve,
yeah.
I guess.
We can put anything. We can draw the prettiest picture of anybody that there is, and they can all draw beautiful pictures. And when we design a golf course and do a colored rendering, we give it to the client, and they think this is what it's going to look like. And I usually tell them, look, don't start counting how many bunkers are here, because they may not be. We may have 80 of them, but they may not be where they say on this plan. I want that latitude and license to move anything I want to move to make sure it fits in, it sets, and it creates a look, and it creates a turning point, it creates a hazard. It creates whatever I want it to want, but I can't do it on paper. I have to do it out in the field, and that's what we did here. I was here every week, while they were clearing trees, because we had them flagged, and we'd leave some, take some out. When they're shaping the golf course, especially when they're shaping the fairways and the green bunkers, and all the bunkers, the look is what you come up with. You work for the last inch, and if you lose that, you've lost everything. You did a lot of work for nothing.
Let's talk about for a second the hazards at Oxford, and what you have to work with, what you've had to create, quantity and quality of them, and what you're trying to accomplish on the hazards and the hazard play.
Well, on hazards, that starts out at the design process. How many water holes do you have? Are they on the right side? Are they on the left side? Are they on both sides? How many do you want in play? To create variety. You always want like water in play on some because it's pretty. But it does lose a golf ball and it adds two strokes to your game. So you don't want too many of them. Florida, we can't get away from it. But out here at Oxford, we had creeks. We put in some lakes. We have contour. I mean, contour is a hazard in itself. When you hit it uphill, it stops. So if you hit the ball 230, you're only going to hit it 200 in the air. It's going to go 205, so you've just lost 25 yards. That's a hazard to me. And so we have to be careful about putting, bunkers in the way, trees in the way, creeks in the way when you have contour also, because that's a limiting factor. That adds to the yardage of the golf course. So we'll add bunkers that, landing areas to accentuate, a turning point, to create a look, and also to create, a stray shot hazard. They can hit it over it, they can hit it around it, they can hit it to the side of it. There's nothing saying that you have to go over this bunker to get to the green. I'll give you another spot to hit it to and then chip into the green if you can't make that shot. So bunkers as hazards are designed for looks and appearance, for setting up a golf hole, to turn a golf hole, and to make it look good. And they're there to catch a stray ball also. But when you're in that hazard, you have to be able to get out of it. Most people, if they put it too steep, you have to take a wedge out, and then you have another 7, 8, or 9 iron to the green. You should be able to advance the ball in a hazard, and they call them hazards, and it's a funny thing. Every golf course in America has a problem with the bunkers. They bury. The sand's not this. It's not that. They want perfect lies. Well, you're in a hazard. They forget that they're in a hazard. And my definition of the hazard is, you're in the hazard, the ball may be sitting up, but I'm not going to let you get to the green unless you hit it dead perfect. Other than that, you're going to get close. And I know when I was doing, you mentioned the Trump course down there, I built a couple bunkers, and I had the golf pro in the bunker while I was building it. On a short par four, I said, I want to see you in this hazard, put this ball on the green. He dropped the ball in the hazard, knocked it on the green. I said, okay, let's grass it. The bunker's finished. Now, if he couldn't get out of that bunker and put it on the green, I would have lowered the top of the bunker till he can get out of it, a golf pro. So I know the shot can be made, just has to be perfect. Other than that, If you can't do it, you have to lay it up and then hit your next shot. So I want to create shots, but they have to be made perfectly, or else you have to do the option. And I think that's fair. Because if everybody can get out of it, then it's not a hazard. And then you didn't hit a great shot. So if you get in a low-lying bunker and you hit it on the green, big deal. It's the same as hitting it off the fairway. You can't pat yourself on the back for that.
When a player steps up to the tee box of one of your courses, how should they, for the first time, how should they play it in their mind before they hit the ball? What should they do? What should they be looking for? What kind of strategy position in their mind should they take before they hit the first shot of that hole?
Well, the first thing I want them to know is where the hole goes. If they get up there and say, is this a dog leg left or a dog leg right, then maybe I didn't do enough to tell them that. So there's going to be bunkers either short left or short right, bunkers long left, long right, to set up a golf hole. So visually, when they see it, they see bunkers that are on the left side. They're going to want to know how far they are. Can I carry those bunkers to make a dog leg if the hole's going to go to the left? And they'll have a yardage book with them, or they'll have something to tell them, you know, how far that shot is. So I want them to say, okay, I can't carry those, so I have to play it over here on the right. And every golf course has a scorebook. You know, they have a picture of the hole. They'll tell you the yardage. So you're going to know when you stand on there that these bunkers are 225 yards to carry. If you can't carry them, there's a place to play over on the right-hand side. I'm telling you that if you can't hit it 230, this is where you're supposed to be, over here on the right. If you can hit it 230, you're going to catch a little downslope, you're going to get some roll, you're going to have a better shot to the green. So if you've got the guts to go over the bunkers, go ahead. Then you got a better shot at the green. Now, I may have a green that sets in from right to left, and if the pin's on the left, you have to carry another bunker. Where if you're on the right, you have a longer shot, but you have a straight-in shot to the green. So that's the type of thing that I'll make them choose. Because if a guy can hit it 230 and carry that bunker, chances are he can get a wedge up in the air to carry another bunker on the green. He's a good player. But if he's not, he plays it down the right, comes into the green on the right side, and it's a straight-in green for him now. It's not an angled green where he has to go over a bunker. They're the type of things that, you know, that they'll know after they play it. They won't know what the second shot is if the first time they're out here. They may hit it down the right side and say, oh, I should have played the right because now I got to go over a bunker. They won't know two shots in advance. You know, I'm not that good that I can put that in their head, you know, right off the bat. Unless it's a wide open hole straight and there's no trees blocking their view, then they see the green with the bunker there. Then they may say, well, I better stay over here, then I don't have to go over the bunker. But if it's a slight dog leg and they can't see it out here at Oxford, you know, you have those hills. So sometimes you don't see the green on your tee shot. So you have to know the course to say, okay, I can carry him, but I still want to be on the right side. Then that's why I don't have to mess with the bunker. That's the type of thing I like to make them. I like to make them think on their drive and then think on their, you know, their second shot. You know, if the pin is back and it's over the bunker, can I make that shot back there? Or do I have to take a different club and lay up and then putt it back there? Because when you have a green that angles right to left or left to right, there's a one club difference in that green where if you have water on the right and the green goes left to right and you play for the pin, and if you all of a sudden bail out and go over here, now this club carried you over the green because there is no green behind this part. The green's only 60 feet wide, but it's 100 feet left to right. That's what they have to learn out here at Oxford. You know, if they take one club, they have to go at the pin with that club. Or they have to take a different club and go short and not take the chance, because if they bail out, they're in trouble. So they'll learn that when they play out here, I hope.
You've been designing for a while. You pretty much grew up thinking about design. How has the equipment changed design for you in that period of time? I mean, the equipment obviously has advanced. You were saying before, guys can hit it 300 yards now. That wasn't happening when you started in this business.
Well, it's taken a lot of fun out of the design business. You know, now you have to work really hard. How do you make a 400-yard hole good. You know, because these guys can hit it 300, 310. They always have a wedge in their hand. And you can't trick it up for the average player. It's a tough deal, you know, to design. You almost have to know that you're going to design for a major tournament one day and say, okay, these par fives, and they have to go back down to a par 70. You know, make the par fives 505, par four. You know, the yardage of a par should be irrelevant today. Just go out there and play. Take the par off. Whatever you score, you score. Forget the birdie, forget the eagle, because everybody's, you know, hitting it different lengths. But in our design now, if we have a dog leg, we have to make the turning point almost 300 yards. Because the good player, you take the driver out of his hand. Then you get criticized. You only get criticized from good players on a design. They say, I can't hit driver on any of these golf holes. That's bad design. Well, if you give them the driver in their hand, you give them 300 yards. Now, what do you have left? You have 440. You can't make every hole 440, 450 for the average guy. But then you're giving the long hitter, a wedge shot all the time. So it's, you know, how you place the bunkers, where you place them. And, you know, you don't want to trick the golf course up by the longer you make it, the narrower you make it. And then, you know, that hurts the good player, too. You want them, even though they can hit it 300 yards, sometimes they don't hit it straight. So the only saving factor an architect has is the wind. When the wind blows, you know, all bets are off. You know, the golf course is fair game for everybody. You know, that's the only thing that'll keep par safe is the wind. But if you're trying to design it for 300-yard drives, you're going to do a bad job.
That's interesting.
And hurt the average guy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's things you can do to make it still interesting. Put a lot of bunkers out at 310, 320, but then the guy that hits it 200, he has to carry these bunkers again. So the guy hits it 300, let him hit it 300. Don't take it out of his hand. You know, he earned it. I wish I could hit it 300.
He probably could at some point if you had that equipment.
No, I just got a new driver, and I'm telling him I want to hit it low with a hook so it rolls. Because I can only hit it so far.
Let's talk more about Oxford right now. I'm curious to know, how important is it to have a shared vision with the owners of a new project?
Well, these owners are excited about doing this project here at Oxford. You know, they see an opportunity to do something that somebody else tried to and failed, and now they are going to do this and realize it. They see what the golf course turned out, you know, what it looks like. They're excited about that, and they're starting to do their land planning, and they're upgrading the look of the houses. They're upgrading everything because they feel now that this is really a high-end community because of the golf course, and they want it to continue that way. And, you know, they're always asking, you know, what can we do to bring the residents in to make them feel part of this country club? You know, we want to make them feel like this is their, not their second home, but part of their first home. You know, whether you sit in my living room or the club's living room, you want the same feeling. And I think that's what they're going to try to create here, you know, feeling, because everybody's nice here. You can't find one person that's not nice in Oxford. I mean, they just don't make them here, you know. They're just great people, and it's going to be easy to create that feeling in the clubhouse. I mean, you're going to walk in there, you're going to feel like you knew this guy 30 years and you just met him. I mean, they're just so friendly. We were out here, I had my wife out here, we were here during a hurricane in Florida. It just happened to be our anniversary, and they took us to dinner, and we felt like we knew these people for 40 years. I love to hear the people talk. You know, when I first met my wife, she was from West Virginia. I could barely understand her, and I used to just love to listen to her talk. So when I come out here, it reminds me of the old days when I first met my wife. If I didn't live in Florida, I'd probably live here. I mean, it's just such a nice place to live, and the people are so friendly, and having a good golf course to play, you know, makes it easy to stay here.
So how does Oxford rate in world-class golf courses that you've worked on?
You never know till it's played, and you know, you think something's easy and it may be hard. Most people think everything's hard and it usually turns out easy. So, you know, knowing, you know, what I know from other golf courses and how they were built and everything, I think this is going to be, you know, a really challenging golf course from the tips of the tees. And even from the front players, you know, they're not going to have an easy time playing out here. They're going to have an enjoyable time. They're going to have to learn to play it, like I said before. You know, you can't do certain things, and you can get away with doing certain things. But as far as, you know, a championship golf course, they'll have all they want out here. When these college players come out here, they're going to know they're on a golf course.
We talked about the ownership. Another aspect of this country club is it's being managed by Troon. And how important is it for you to have a shared vision with Troon? And how is it to work with in cooperation and partnership with?
Well, knowing Troon's involved, I know it's going to be a first-class operation. They've been doing this. They're doing it now. They have a lot of golf courses. They're going to run it the right way. I don't say everybody's made all the mistakes you can make, but they eliminate all those type of things. They know how other country clubs run. I'm sure they have clubs that are in the same status of this golf club here that they can draw from. They have personnel that they can feed into here. They know how a club has to be operated. They know how to make people feel welcome and feel greeted and what to do with people. And it's a people business. When you walk in the pro shop and the golf pro says, "Hi, how are you? You all," and stuff like that, they're just going to feel good. And that's the first thing you want to do, is feel good when you come into a place. And because if you come in with a bad attitude, you know, you half your day is ruined. But Troon is a great organization, and I'm glad they're running this place here, because it takes a golf operator to run it, you know, to get it. And to get the people involved in it, you know, the community, and they'll do a good job doing that.
Does that enhance your challenge? Having Troon, knowing that Troon's involved, is that like, okay, now I got to step it up a bit?
Oh no. I put everything into every golf hole I can find, and keep it in balance with what the rest of the golf course is. I don't think there's anything I'd go out there and redo or do over. You know, we had our shot at it, and we feel like we got everything out of every golf hole without, you know, just going into excess, you know, 40 more bunkers you don't need. You know, we have what we need out there. We're doing a tree program now, and that's a progression. You know, you do so many the first year, so many the second year. You want to see how it plays. And usually I tell a client, you know, don't get the permanent tee markers the first year. See which holes, you know, we think this is going to play. If you stroke the golf course, this is going to be the eighth toughest hole. It may be the fourth. It may be the tenth when you average out the score. So you may want to move the markers up 15 or 20 yards. You may want to move them back. So do a temporary scorecard. Find out how the golf course plays the first year. Then adjust the markers for the average guy. And the golf pro is going to step 3 yards from the back tee. That's where it's going to be measured from, point blank. That's the rating we're going to get from that point right there. But the others are going to play different, and I think you need a year to find out where that location should be for that tee marker. And most people never think of that, so the last three golf courses I've done, I said, look, do this, next year do that. And they said, okay, we'll do that, and that's what they do. And they find out it works well that way. And then the golf shop's responsible for taking the scores, how they handicap holes, you know, after the first year to set up the golf course. Because everybody thinks when you get a stroke, you're supposed to win the hole. And you're not. You're supposed to have it. So it's not always the toughest hole that gets the number one stroke. Because if I'm an eight and I'm giving the guy three shots, I'm going to bogey the same holes he bogeys. So I lose three holes. I can't get that through people's head, you know. It's not always the toughest hole that gets the first shot. Because you got to be fair.
So what is it about the Oxford Project that you're most excited about?
Seeing people's face when they come out to play the golf course for the first time from what they had. And hearing their comments of how much they like it or they don't like it. And I'd like to hear, I'm a critic. I don't like to hear the good things. I want to hear what's wrong. So if there is, maybe we can do some adjustment. But I know what was here and I know what they have now, and I want to hear their reaction and see their face when they finish. That'll be the most exciting thing for me.
Well, that's it. And the only reason we stopped there was because my camera crew ran out of tape. Luckily for me, though, after we left the Lyceum building on the Ole Miss campus, I was able to spend much more of the day, including a couple of meals, with Jim and the others. I only wish I could have continued the recording because even though he told me that his brother Tom was the talker, he has many amazing stories to tell. Now, to see the finished video, go to www.thecountryclubofoxford.com. Oxford is O-X-F-O-R-D, and The Country Club of Oxford is one word, .com. And in just a couple clicks, you'll be able to watch and hear the production. As always, we'd love your feedback on today's podcast. And if you have a specific course you'd like us to cover, write me at golfsmarter@ttour.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Fred Green.